Hello and welcome to The Cynic Weekly on the 20th of October. It's Thursday, the weekend's about to kick off, and we get plenty to discuss. I'm your host, Christopher Gallagher, and I'm joined by Christopher Samani. Hello, Christopher.
How you doing, Chris? Weekend doesn't kick off till tomorrow, really, does it? After five, I would say.
Well, I like to think that the weekend kicks. He's a fucking curmudgeon, this one, eh?
Pedant. No, but you're announcing the weekends.
It's about to kick
and
off.
There's a lot of people that are going to wake up and go to work tomorrow, so.
For me, even when I was working in an office, for example, I still felt like the weekend started on a Thursday night.
Let's move on.
Start. Chuckling in the background is, it's Alan Edgar. Hello, Alan, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. I've been taking up a sales right enough, but other than that, all good. I like a Friday as well, so not quite the weekend, though. I do probably agree, technically.
Okay, fair enough. I'll just see myself out.
Just bring your tone down a bit, just to match that.
I just wanted to have a bit of fun.
Going all Timmy Mallet there, man. Bit zany, bit wacky, bit early.
Off to a bad start. First time in a while, but here we go. It's great. Celtic, I have, we were talking last week about how we wanted a performance. We've got two in a row of really good standard of football. Some exciting stuff we're going to talk through. We'll also talk through the upcoming game against Hearts, and we'll maybe get some thoughts on Shakhtar. Then we'll talk about a Celtic legend who is retiring, and I think we'll have fun kind of picking over the career of a genuinely fantastic Celtic player. But let's start. Just get your thoughts, Chris, because throughout the week, The Cynic do podcasts every day on thecynic.co. You can subscribe, click on the link. But Chris, what was your thoughts on the Hibs game? Because I think last week we were optimistic, but there was still a little bit of trepidation that we wanted a good performance.
Yeah, I thought we were excellent. I mean, obviously both games. But that thing that we've been talking about being clinical and taking chances, That's the one thing that completely turned around. Hibs have been on a decent run of form. I think if they had beaten us, they would have went, within a point or something. The Rangers, don't quote me on that, but they're not like one of the cannon fodder sides of the SPFL. They've been playing pretty well recently, but we just played them off the park. There was some excellent individual performances, and it was really pleasing to see because, there's a different school of thought amongst Celtic support. Some people were saying, this lack of clinical edge or cutting edge, shall we say, is something to be concerned about. Other people saying it will come because of, the stats and all that sort of stuff. But it's just pleasing to see it happen, and it was great for Forrest as well. 100 goals. I mean, I know he's kind of splits the support, but aye, overall he's been a very good servant, and it was nice to see him join 29 other players to score 100 goals for Celtic.
Lovely.
Good factor.
Good fact. Love it. Just a couple away from 100 assists as well, as far as I'm led to believe. So, great.
Well googled.
Alan, can you get off my case, pal? How about that?
Once I get that Friday feeling, I will, mate. So.
we'll move on to the Motherwell game, but just, we discussed the game at length on Monday on the agenda, but it's funny that, the idea of James Forrest now starting at Tynecastle isn't one that you would kind of be a little bit concerned about. It's one that it's not guaranteed, but it's something that would probably be in the mixer to happen.
I think I think a lot of people will be a lot more comfortable with the idea after you've put in a good performance.
Yeah.
I think had he not, then he wouldn't be in contention. I think most people, I'm still of the opinion he probably won't start, to be honest. But it is good. I think it's just helpful for Ange and helpful for the squad to know that there's talent there, that you can bring a player in who's really not kicked a ball all season and he can score a hat-trick. I don't think it's necessarily an indicator that he's back or anything like that, or that he was ever away. I think it's just that when you bring players in, you've got to put in a performance, and he certainly did. So it was good for him, really pleased, and just a wee reminder that he's not actually 50 years old. He's only 31, and he can probably still do his more than a turn. But I think, I think we talked about it all on Monday. I don't think Ange really gets too high or too low in individual performances. We've seen that with the players who maybe haven't been performing. But he certainly did his case no harm, and he's in contention, but probably in opinion I don't think it will change too much.
And a lot of that might come down to the performances yesterday. We played Motherwell in the League Cup. It was a you know, I'll just give him my two. I watched the game in Edinburgh, in Malone's. There was some, I think, Edinburgh Celtic supporters club guys there. It was a really good good setup, good Guinness. If you're in Edinburgh, it's just down from Haymarket as well, so good place. I thought we performed really well. And I think what you just said there, Alan, about, you know, he probably might just find himself on the periphery, on the bench, is probably maybe got a lot to do with how certain players performed yesterday. Chris, what's your thoughts on just your general thoughts on the game against Motherwell?
Another good performance. You know, we only get the first goal a wee bit later in the first half, you know. But even up until then, we were playing really well. It was, you know, it's sometimes quite easy when we're not finding the net to overlook some of the all-round play, but I thought we played some great football. I thought the midfield three were all excellent. Hatate probably the best, but O'Reilly again putting in a very good performance, sitting deep. And Moy proving that he's a player. He's got a role. He's going to play a big part in this season for us. Probably in a couple of different roles. You know, he'll be able to kind of shore games up, but he also looks as if he's an attacking threat as well. Abada scoring and not doing much else. And then Kyogo obviously getting a goal, which will be good for him, even though it was on a plate and he missed a couple of opportunities, which I'm sure we'll talk about. But no, it was good because there was changes to the side. You know, it wasn't, you know, and the manager talked about that beforehand, about using different sources of information, you know, the eye test and training. And it might look from the outside odd, some of the starting lineup and the players that he picks, but he says there's a reasoning and justification around that. So when you do that and you switch it up and you still see a performance like that and the amount of goals we scored, that's really pleasing. So 10 goals in 2 games, 3 scoring Celtic are back.
There was a few changes made. Sigurdsson came in goals, Juranovic, Carter Vickers, Jens, Taylor, O'Reilly, Moy and Hatate, Abada, Haksabanovic each side of Kyogo. Alan, thoughts?
Really, really good team performance. I think it's funny that well, certainly from my point of view, you seem a bit calmer because it's a cup game. I genuinely think if we put in that performance and that was a league game last night, you would be flying off the back of it. But when a cup game, I don't know, you just expect us to do that now in the cups, because obviously we do have a tremendous
incredible record, yeah.
But I thought it was a really, really good team performance, and I think that's what's really coming to the fore this year with this group of players, that it's really, there's a lot of individual talent in there, and I probably agree. I think Hatate was outstanding last night, aside from his goal. He just looks better and better most weeks. But the team performance is starting to improve, and that's really becoming our X factor, if you like. I think the fact that the team really do look like, I felt like last night particularly, it looked effortless at points. Mm. It's not, there's a lot of hard work that goes into it, and there's a lot of effort on the night, but it looked just so simple last night, and some of the football was an absolute joy to watch. Really, really impressive performance, and you know, 10 goals in 2 games for us is a real, real boost, because you know, obviously we have struggled a little bit recently. So really good, you know, even down to the way that keeping Kyogo on and him getting the goal in the end,
yeah.
I think is a real positive, because you talk about XG and getting in the positions all you like, strikers love to hit the net. And, you know, that's a huge boost for him. So really, really positive, really good feeling off the back of it. But it's just bizarre. You know, cup games seem like a complete aside until you start to get to that semi-final and final stage, which then it becomes much more nervous. But last night, it just felt so comfortable. It was great to watch. Really, really good.
Yeah, and I think that's the most important thing, Chris. Like, it was really good fun. Like, you know, we talk about Celtic sometimes in a very, like, technical way in regards to we should be doing this, we should be doing that. And some of it's a bit, even if we win, it can still be a little bit doom and gloom. But it's just when it's fun to watch, you can't fucking beat it.
Yeah, and I mean, apart from some of the big games, I go into games like yesterday assuming or expecting that I'm going to have fun watching the game, I'm going to enjoy watching Celtic. And I get a bit pissed off, daft as it sounds, when we don't perform well, and it's almost like that was a slog. Do you know what I mean? I've had to sit through an hour and a half there watching that, and it wasn't particularly enjoyable, which isn't fair, obviously, but that's what we got last night. You know, it was one of those games where, you know, once we get that goal, you know, and I think at that time you thought it would come, and we added a few more after that. It was just fun to watch. It was just really good. And that's the way that we've been largely under Ange, largely this season, and it was just good to have it back, because sometimes you can maybe over-egg the sticky points, you know, and you maybe don't appreciate some of the better kind of performances and the better games, but certainly really enjoyed those last two. And I think, as Alan says, it sets you in a good foot. You're, you know, we've got a couple of hard games coming up.
Yep.
Three, actually, if you're talking about Livingston.
Fuck aye.
Tynecastle, Shakhtar and Livingston's not going to be easy. But you've got a confidence going into them just now, and you can't ask for any more than that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we did make changes, Alan. The guys who came in, obviously, the kind of people were talking about Sigurdsson, and a very, you know, there were some comments about his kind of distribution and stuff. Obviously, Moy, as Chris says, continuing his really, really good form, and Kyogo did get his goal. So a lot of boxes being ticked. Did anyone really stand out for you in during the game that you thought actually excellent?
Yeah, I think there was a lot of really good performances, but from the guys that you would expect. So, you know, looking at maybe the players that come in, I thought Moy again did look really comfortable. And I think most people probably at the start of the season, it wasn't a signing that I was, I wouldn't say excited about, but it was an addition to the squad as opposed to anything else. But these are the kind of games where I think you think you should be able to bring Aaron Moy into, especially now he's been here a bit. He should be up to speed, should know the rest of the squad quite well. This is a kind of game that you probably want to see him playing in, and especially if he's going to perform like that. I think when you start going up, you know, the levels, it can become a little bit more difficult, not just for him, but for a lot of the players in the team, and we've seen that. But that's what you want to see, a really good performance on Saturday, and then he's offered that again last night. Matt O'Reilly is really, really showing us quite a lot in the six as well. I'm really impressed by him in there. I think he's been excellent. I think he doesn't have some of the things that McGregor does have, but he does have some of the things that Callum McGregor doesn't. So there is it's a change, it's different, but I've been quite impressed with him in there. I've seen a lot, obviously, Sigurdsson's done well. He should be happy with his performance, but didn't really have anything to do. His passing was fine, was crisp, you know, quite comfortable, and he did a lot of the things you would expect, but you know, I wouldn't. It was a good debut, you know, but I don't think it's not really a big test for a goalkeeper, I think, last night.
I got a text that's came in from Daz, and he says, wee question for tonight after last night's game. Are we much more harsh on Abada for his shortcomings than we are on someone like Kyogo and Maeda? Keep up the good work. It's an interesting one. Chris, thoughts?
You're nodding, but I think, but I'm not nodding. I think, at the very least, maybe this is a bit simplistic, but at the very least, with Kyogo and Abada, you get work rate. Kyogo and Maeda. See, with Abada, I mean, right, first of all, see the run for the first goal? It was outstanding.
Yeah.
You know, it really was good. Really timed good. Really, really well. He takes up great positions in the box. The finishes were both, you know, the second one, that wasn't straightforward, the way that he cushioned that into the bottom corner. And he should have had a hat-trick, you know, that was maybe not. But quite literally, he can offer nothing, nothing out wide right, other than that. And that's, for me...
Alan's taking his headphones off, he's away, he's up the road.
He just looks to me like a centre-forward.
Yeah, that's what I was saying that yesterday.
Like. And as opposed to somebody who's either, is definitely not a right winger, and even playing on the right side of a front three, he just... And I know he's young, and I keep caveating this because I have to, because he keeps scoring goals, and you can't just dismiss the guy.
No.
But performance-wise, I don't know, I think that Abada's got a lot of backers, you know, that, you know, really praise him to the hilt sort of thing. So I'm not sure the criticism of Abada is any more than Maeda or Kyogo. But even when they're not scoring, I think they're contributing more to games, whereas I don't think you get that with Abada. So I'll leave it there.
Alan, your rebuttal?
I don't disagree. I think I largely agree, because the reason I was chuckling at the start was because when I was watching the game, it just absolutely... I think until Abada scored, everything he touched turned to complete shite. And that's really been his delight. But then he scored and you weren't surprised. I mean, run is great. He really gets in there in front of, I think, two Motherwell players, and actually gets into a better position than Kyogo does.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so familiar. And you're actually that used now to kind of thinking he's having a stinker. He's a candidate to come off at halftime, or that he's went and scored, because he does do it so often. Yeah. Or, you know, sometimes it's not necessary. I think he was particularly poor up until the goal last night. But there's other games where he's maybe just a little bit more, he doesn't impact the game, but then he comes alive, and his movement in the box is unbelievable, and yeah. his desire to get there is incredible. I don't think he's a striker, and I think it reminds me a lot of, remember when Frimpong was really good going forward, and a lot of people wanted to see him higher up the park because they think, well, he's really good at attacking.
Yeah, yeah.
I think Abada's ability is that he's playing against fullbacks who maybe think if he wanders in, he thinks a centre-half will get them, and a centre-half thinks that the fullback's going to follow him in.
He
preys on that vulnerability, and he is lethal. And you're right as well, his finish for the second was just superb.
Unbelievable.
The highs and the lows with Leila Abada are incredible. But I think his goals mean that it is worth persisting with, whether it's a guaranteed starter. He's a great asset to have, but he is such a bizarre player. I think he's one of those players that I think if you were, you know, if you're a coach at Celtic and you were working with him, there's so much to work on. And some of the things that he brings, though, are just, you don't know when they're going to come.
Some
things they might not, yeah. But he does have an ability to score that I think, say, you know, we talk about Maida's work rate. Leila Abada has a knack for being in good positions, and when he has to hit quickly, he really is lethal. Mm. And I think he's probably, you know, in terms of that, his contribution to goals is just incredible. So it's one of those ones you just have to kind of, I mean, I don't even know. You just shrug your shoulders and go, he will score goals.
I mean, that's true. But see, like, as a wide player, I mean, the only game I can really remember him, you know, really toasting the fullback was Barisic in the 3-0 game last season. You know, he stood him up a few times and beat him. But generally, he just runs into the fullback. I mean, he did that against Leipzig and he got injured. You know that way where he does the step over and the fullback just stands and he just runs straight at him?
Yeah.
It's so frustrating. It's incredibly frustrating to the point now where he starts, I'm thinking, but despite that frustration, as Alan says, he comes alive in the box. He's electric in the box, and that's a puzzle, because you might be right. He might not be a centre forward. I'm looking at that because of his attributes lend itself to a centre forward, but I wouldn't kind of hang my hat and say that's definitely where his position is. But you're going to carry him for large parts of games if you're going to play him out wide right, and that's going to keep people on his back, me included. And that's just the nature of it. But at the same time, see if somebody says we're getting rid of Abada or whatever, you'd be like, well, hang on a minute. You know, he scores so many important goals and he's had so many big moments for us. But at the same time, you know, for large parts of games, I'm just like, why are you on that park? But we know, because he scored a goal.
And I think people come at the debate from different sides. You know, people think you should play him every game. Ange doesn't. He's not a guaranteed starter. Even when everyone's fit and available, he's not a guaranteed starter. And it's because I think he will appreciate that his overall contribution sometimes, if he doesn't get those goals, which largely he does, then can impact the team. But I think he's just it's quite unique to be in a position where we have a winger at 21 with the goal return that he has, which is absolutely phenomenal.
It's outrageous.
If he was to, you know, stay on track, you know, you'd be able to work out, but his goal return would far exceed James Forrest's if he was to stay here for that same length of time and continue that. But we still think there's more to come, or there's better to come. It's such a great position to be in that you have a player who's given you that many goals, given you such clear, tangible contributions to games, but you're still thinking, does he get a start? Does he not? Because there's teams that are in a very different position with wingers who they want to really like, but actually they give them fuck all, largely. So I think it is one of those ones that it's a debate that you're quite happy to have, but it is a really...
But when does
it's a bizarre one.
Like, the points you're making are both, you know, obviously correct, and I think everyone can kind of see that. But, like, when is it in a situation where you look and you think he needs to do more to the point where you can't start him? Like, so for example, the Real Madrid game, the European games, the step up's been quite big for him, and he's kind of, and I don't mean this in a bad, but he's kind of found wanting a little bit. Mm-hmm. A lot of them have, so I'm not going to criticise him individually for that. But, you know, I mean, Alan, like, when he gets to that point,
I think the issue will be if someone else makes that spot
theirs,
and the issue that we have is, I think at the moment, is that Jota is a guaranteed starter. Maeda is very, very trusted, but his form recently has dipped. His work rate has not dipped. I think he guarantees you a minimum, and that he will protect your defender as well. And you've seen that against Leipzig. Defensively, it was great. Going forward, offered nothing. So every winger that we have, probably with the exception of Jota, has a big flaw that I think is a drawback. If Maida hits form, different story. But if Abada hits form, then Maida can't get in. James Forrest, bit of a different scenario. The kind of the interesting one is Hak Šabanović, because I think we all really want to like him. But is he a winger, or is he better inside? And I think you've seen last night, I had big expectations for Hak Šabanović, and I thought, if he really puts in a big performance here, it's him and Jota potentially.
Dark,
and then
yeah,
you can swap sides, do what you really did with Maida at the start of the season.
Did he not click it for you?
I think his best performance was the St. John's game when he played through the middle and he had this roving role. But you can't really get that when you're a winger.
Yeah.
And there's such a high expectation of what you've got to do back the way. It's still very early days for him. He's probably similar to Abildgaard in that he's got to get properly up to speed. But I think his position is in question. I think at the moment, when Jota's fit, when everyone is fit, it still looks like Jota plus one to me. And I probably do think that, to be honest, the front runner in the big games will still be, I think it's Maida, probably. I do, because I think Ange will back Maida to go back to form or kind of maybe sharpen up his game. And I think he will go back to that. He's preferred, which probably has been. If you really had to get Ange to pick, I think he'd probably go Jota and Maida. But it's Jota plus one, definitely. I think in the big games, he'll say, do you know what? And there's a minimum that I get from Maida in terms of system that I don't get from Forrest, I don't probably get from Abada. But it is Jota plus one for me. It's interesting, but until someone really goes and grabs that jersey, I think they're all going to find their minutes rotated, especially in those big games.
With the exception of Jota, you think Jota is the guaranteed starter?
I think he's shown enough there. Yeah. I think he's, I mean, you could make the case for it talking for 10 minutes, but I just think it's a straightforward yes.
I completely agree, yep.
First thing, Hak Šabanović looks very like Tony Watt.
As in, actually looks like him?
Aye.
Okay.
Looks like Tony Watt.
Maybe. I like he's not even floating it, he's just telling us it as a fact. No, it's like he's James Forrest on
it. It's a definite fact. There's Gal Googling Hak Šabanović because he doesn't even like Celtic.
Can you go off my back, please?
I would agree, Jota's a starter. I think they all need to do more, but Jota in a different way, because he's already a level above in terms of quality, but you'd love to see him be able to do it far more often. Whereas the rest, I think they've not got that consistency. They've all shown moments of quality, but then at other points, you've Maida more recently, certainly you're thinking, geez, you're really not contributing anything. So I think, and that's always been a thing for me, in terms of players, you know, with guys like Rogic or Chris Commons even before that, you know, you would get big moments from players and then a lot of the other time you would be carrying them in the team. And I always want more. I always think, you know, the moments are great, but I think you need to contribute more. And I think we've got that in the wide right. There's a school of thought that, you know, we maybe need something else there. And that's, you know, that's maybe for later in the season, the January transfer window, talk about that. But right now you just want somebody to come in and do more. You really do. You want them to kind of grab that position, and what you're getting is fleeting glimpses of it just now. So it's up for grabs, and we'll see what happens. But I think the manager will demand more of them all, and it's up to them to kind of pick up the mantle.
I think the solution that we have came to tonight is it's quite clear that we just simply need to melt down James Forrest, Leila Bada and Dyson Maida into one player. The composure of Forrest, the finishing ability of Abada and the overall work rate and defensive output that you get from Maida, because if you put them all together, you've got your partner for Jota.
What would you call him?
Come back to that.
Joy.
You don't need to make.
I just call him James Forrest.
just make up a new name, you know.
Joyida.
No, you don't need to combine them.
That's fine, I'll call
Let's move on. It doesn't really matter.
Have you seen the film The Fly, Alan? Because there's some concepts there that
I have not,
I think you
but
enjoy.
If someone could mock up the physical attributes of the three in one picture, I'd quite like to see it.
Christopher Bowd, this is the call. Bowdy's got COVID, so I hope you feel better, Bowdy.
He's got nothing better to be doing than that.
Exactly, yeah, lying in his bed making wee pictures.
Okay, well soon, Bowd.
Kyogo got that goal that I think we've all been just kind of, you know, urging him to get. Opportunities missed. Do you think it was the goal was hit weighing heavy on his mind? And that, because the one where he misses where the ball, we did a reaction yesterday, which kind of goes over every kind of action within the game in good detail. So if you want a kind of full overview reaction, that's available, thecynic.co. But the chance that he missed where the keeper goes the wrong way and he just hits it, that to me was classic. That was like Harold Brattbach-esque, you know. It was like that sort of low in confidence and just kind of not doing almost the your natural game. But then he does something where he's, what, 25 yards out, he turns, he tees himself up and he hits this unbelievable shot that hits the underside of the bar. Like, his quality's absolutely not in any doubt. His work rate, as you say, Chris, is in no doubt. And hopefully now he's got the kind of the monkey off his back of that goal and it can kind of push him on. Do you think that's what's going to come, Alan?
Yeah, I think you'd have to back. I think it's a different discussion a little bit with, I think a lot of people have been talking about how we're wasting chances. We create a lot, so you will waste chances. Yeah. And I think with Kyogo, there's always been acceptance that he's not necessarily a volume finisher. But what he does to get into those areas then usually means that it's fine, because he usually gets two or three chances, which is maybe why Europe and the bigger games are starting to maybe... We're starting to see a pattern in terms of his goals, but hopefully that will, you know, shake out. I think a lot of people then, you've put Maeda's form into it, and a lot of people say that. Kyogo, though, has got, I think there's a different discussion. You've seen that what Kyogo can do when he's fit and available and he plays a big run of games. He's not been on great form recently. He has missed some chances. I think it's maybe been a bit overcooked. When you miss a chance like that, the first one, and then the second one, I think, where Liam Kelly saves it, it looked like... He is, I hate to use it, as such a kind of cliched phrase, but he is snatching at it, just not having the composure that
doing stuff that he wouldn't normally do.
Because I think when he does get time, he can be a very creative finisher. And I would be expecting him to score both of those. You know, they are good opportunities. So hopefully it is that composure comes back. I really don't know what it's like for a striker. You hear strikers talking about it, that, you know, they have an ability to slow things down the way that a defender doesn't. You see a defender get a chance in the box, you just swing a leg and hope for the best. Strikers don't. They're so calm in that moment. So it's difficult to kind of put yourself in that mindset of what it must be like. But that's what you're hoping. You're hoping that, you know, on Saturday, next week, especially, you know, that Shakhtar game, I still think it's huge. You really want him, if he gets those opportunities, that he can do what he just always generally has done, and slow it down and at least get good contact and try and work the goalkeeper. And it was really, really promising to see that he got the goal last night. If he'd have missed that, then this would be a very different discussion probably. But getting that goal, you hope then that the next time he gets in that opportunity, if it is at Tynecastle on, you know, Saturday, that if he gets a chance that he can just slow the moment down and show that composure, because you've seen it from him in glimpses this season. The rest of it's there, the movement's there, everything. It's just that finishing, and that's what you want to see. So I was delighted for him. I think you could see the relief on the manager, everyone. If he's scoring goals and playing well, this team's ceiling goes up, I think, quite a bit. If he isn't, then, you know, other guys need to pick up the kind of burden.
Yeah, you have to. Chris, delighted for him. He's going to go on to score 40 billion goals.
Maybe.
He's giving you fucking nothing.
What is with you tonight? Jesus.
See, the thing with Kyogo is, we know what qualities he has, but whether he likes it, or we like it or not. See, when you play in the central role up front for Celtic, there's an expectation you'll score goals. Now, I would be delighted for him to go on a run, and it's possibly will. He's absolutely got the ability. That shot for 25 yards, just a moment of pure quality. I was screaming if VAR was in, that would have been, but when you seen it, it was quite clearly not in.
It's miles on.
But quite frankly, he's going to need to start scoring more goals. And that was good. I mean, this might sound a bit harsh, and he's getting in the positions and things like that, but, you know, he plays that central role for us, and he's got so many good attributes, and it's more magnified when nobody else is scoring. But the one thing that's still there for me is he's not the League Cup finalist side, which is maybe a bit unfair that he won the League Cup final single-handedly, and I'm saying this, but, you know, he just needs to have another... We need a big moment from him, whether it's against Rangers or whether it's on Tuesday against Shakhtar, because I know we'll talk about that later. For me, that's still a huge, huge game of football for us. I just want to see him do it there as well. I want him to not only start scoring more goals domestically, but I want to see more of the big moments from him. And that might be unfair, and you know, it might be that, as you said, that's the monkey off his back now, and he's going to kind of kick on. And I genuinely hope he does that. But at the same time, I'm just thinking, you know, we need a wee bit more from you. We need all these attributes, but we also need you to be putting the ball in the net a bit more, because, quite frankly, you're a Celtic centre forward, and that's what you need to do.
I think that goes exactly to, there is a reassurance, and there is, with strikers, I think it's different to any other position in the park. If a striker takes to the pitch and they've scored five in the last five, you know, consecutive games, it creates an aura, an expectation. It almost comforts everybody, and by proxy it then unsettles other teams. And I think this is a team it's the collective. The collective is really starting to shine through, I think, yeah, as opposed to the individuals. There's loads of good moments. There's loads of individual talent in there, but nothing. We've taken pretty much at different points over the last 18 months, we've taken the best talent out for long periods, and the collective has still continued. If you took Henrik Larsson out of that 2003 team, you don't reach Seville, because you get to a certain point, but you don't have the magic. This team, though, has really managed to cope, you know, domestically anyway, with losing some of their best talent. We're without the captain just now. We've been without Kyogo, CCV, Jota, all these guys that are
We're out of Starfield just now as well.
But even though I agree with that, and I think that's great, and that is very much what this team is, there is just a comfort that comes from having a striker that you just know is going to score. And Kyogo, when you talk about that League Cup final, the aura that almost it creates, is just, it is like a big comfort blanket, knowing that, look, we've got all these great players, but if we need it, we've got Kyogo, and he can do something magic and special, and he can. But I think, as much as we want to believe that as well, I think he probably wants to believe that as well. So how you quantify it, I really don't know, but there is something that comes from that confidence, that belief. And I think we've lost it a little bit, and I think he had too. I mean, his performance against Leipzig, forget the missed chance, because I don't think it was that great an opportunity. He didn't make a great job of it. His overall play was just really, really poor. And I think it goes back to maybe, I think, was it Daz that had texted in saying about, you know, the criticism Abada gets criticism directly. Kyogo's performance against Leipzig was awful. Every element of his game, his touch, you know, dropping in, couldn't control anything. You know, every time we tried to take a throw in, if we went to Kyogo, you'd be as well just throwing it back. Even his pressing, he was chasing, wasn't shutting it down properly. There was so much of the game.
Erratic, you would say.
Just so much of it you thought, I mean, where does this came from? Because missing chances is one thing, but the rest of his game just completely fell away. And so it's good to see him back, because he has a great talent, and he is very much he is one of the kind of star players in the team. If you can get him back and the rest of the players don't drop off, it just takes up what the team can do. And I think Tuesday's a big one. Tuesday's a great opportunity for him, because I think him and Gigi would both love a big moment. But I think for us, if Kyogo was to get it in a European game, you get that belief that he can do it. It then changes the nature of maybe what we can do in those games.
You mentioned O'Reilly, who I thought was excellent, played really, really well. He's coming into that role, Chris.
I'm going to need to look this up, because I think I've said it for the last 2 weeks. I'm pretty sure he said one of the reasons that he left Fulham was they were playing him in the deep lying role in midfield. Now, I might have made this up, but I keep saying it, I haven't bothered my arse to check it out. So, I don't know. Maybe he doesn't like playing it. You Google that, gal. Dead air.
We'll just sit here and wait.
The point I'm making is, I mean, it's probably different up here, and maybe the context around there was they were giving him the odd game there to fill in, and it wasn't his natural role, and, you know, he didn't see himself developing there. But it just seemed odd to me that we had them in there, and he had cited that as one of the reasons that he didn't leave Fulham. Every chance that I've just made this up, and it doesn't really matter, but generally speaking, he's been excellent in there, to be perfectly honest.
And I think one of the reasons he left Fulham is because he wasn't getting opportunities, but he did play there a couple of times for MK Dons in the six as well. But what I've been really impressed with is that I think when you see Matt O'Reilly's skill set, pretty much up until he played in the six, everything would then lead you to think he's not the type of player that would drop back and play in the six. He's very different to McGregor. He doesn't try and pick up the ball and try and take a player out the same way. He doesn't try and... his movement isn't the same as McGregor's. McGregor's just constantly going. O'Reilly, though, defensively, I think is better than Callum McGregor in the six. I think he's more aggressive. I think he's much more willing to put in a tackle. it's different skill set. I think it's McGregor is still your default in there. But Riley's really impressive in there, and for a player,
Is that question going to be asked that if you know Riley continues at this level and standard consistently until McGregor's back, is there a question to be asked about, like, if he's in thoughts?
I think you would probably, at the moment, you would go back to the default. You look at the games that he's been in there, with the exception of Leipzig, it has been, you know, games that you think you can go and do well, especially the way Hibs played at the weekend. But I thought he was excellent against Leipzig. Mm-hmm. I think he's certainly much more willing to commit himself to tackle than McGregor, who I think does have a tendency to... He will play it much more honestly and try and run alongside someone, as opposed to Riley. I think if he gets a yellow card, it's just one of those things. He sees it as quite hard, isn't he? But we've never seen that in A. And I think the one thing it does is it takes away some of the back and forward for him. And I think you've seen that, the heaviness of these legs towards the later stage of
games. Very much so, tracking
back.
That's
but
true.
He is, I think he's a slightly better protector, McGregor. I think when we're playing out, though, he doesn't make the same effort as McGregor does to get in a position to receive the ball. Mm. And that will take a little bit of work. But for, you know, what, four games he's played in there, I'm really, really impressed by him. I think much more than I would have expected. And I think it maybe then does justify why, you know, when we come on to the plethora of number sixes we've got. But it's why he's thought, I'll play O'Riley. I trust him. He knows the system. He's fit. He's sharp. But he's really good in there as well. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see.
I mean, there was some talk when he arrived that he was like Rodic. You know, he was that kind of 10, that creator. And I think he can play that. But you see somebody like Haksabanovic, who looks a far more natural fit for that. You're not going to get his, you know, higher work rate. But what you're going to get is that sort of playing in the pocket, picking wee passes and stuff like that. O'Riley just, it just seems more natural when he's a wee bit further back, whether that is in the 8 and whether that's in the 6. Now, it's a small sample size, as the stats guys say. So I'm not going to hang my hat and say that he can play in the 6 or whatever and he's going to continue to play there. But the point that you make, I suppose, about the legs that he needs to play in the sort of 8 role, if you will, right? That's very apparent with O'Riley. You can see that he tires if he's got all that running to do. So it is interesting. It might even be, excuse me, when McGregor's fit, that you might see them switching it up. You know, you might see McGregor starting there, bringing the ball out or whatever, and then O'Riley dropping back. It's good to see, because it gives us options in terms of where we may go. But I've definitely been impressed with him, and crucially, I was impressed with him in the Leipzig game, because... Yeah. You know, he had a slow start, I think I said that at the time, and then he just played his way really well into that game, and I thought he looked on that level at that point. And when you can see that against a team like Leipzig, you're thinking, okay, you've definitely got a future there, but that's up to the manager, and we'll see what happens.
If he had a comfortable, see if he was as comfortable in his right foot, or anywhere near as comfortable in his right foot as in his left, he would be gone in January. I think I'm so... He's so comfortable in the ball, the way he manipulates players, the way he uses his body. But you do see, and that's the only slight thing that maybe, because he's not peeling off onto that right-hand side, mm-hmm. if he's playing in the 6, you're a little bit more central, so you need the option of going both sides. I think if you were playing against him, the one thing you would try is make sure he has to play the pass with his right foot, because he's not anywhere near as comfortable on it. But if he was as comfortable, I really think you would be one of those players, you'd be like, a year, and then I see you're gone, because he's so good. So it's kind of good that he's just get those wee bits to learn.
Yeah.
You can see why he is a player that was teams would be watching, because he's got a lot of levels to go up.
The reason he turned down the Fulham's offer was because he had belief in his own ability. It didn't feel right for me to stay. I felt the right decision to pursue other options and to take matters in my own hands. For next week, if you could do a little bit of research, I don't often ask you to.
You could have just let it go, and I could have continued to use it instead of just giving us a generic quote there.
Well, that's the quote I've looked. Well, so
what did you search?
Why did Matt O'Riley leave Fulham?
You get distracted looking at pictures of him, didn't you?
I did. He's gorgeous. On the, you know, as I say, we did the reaction, which is available on sunday.com, but we're going to move on in a moment, but it would be remiss of me not to mention...
Remiss?
It's just a word. But yeah, I did say it. Hatate, you mentioned it at the start, his performance level has skyrocketed to a consistent level of quality. I mean, that drag back for the goal, I mean, I think I might have watched it 100 times in the last day. It's just utterly mesmerising. The quickness of thought and the technique. Alan, he's the guy just now.
Yeah, he's, when he plays well, it really changes what we can do. And he's shown it in glimpses. It's risky because he is the player out of all the players we've got that he's so comfortable receiving the ball with. Even in Europe, he could have an aggressive number 10 pressing him and he'll still want the ball because he'll try and turn on it. And I think people will be critical of him because sometimes it doesn't work. But when it does work, the ability he's got, he's really improving. You think of the development in him, I think over the kind of, you know, time we've had him, 9 months?
Yeah.
The development in him over that period is incredible. And I don't watch international football. Japan must have incredible ability for him not getting that team. I mean, the goal last night was great, but I don't even think it was the best part of his performance.
No, yeah.
It's just
yeah.
The effort, you know, effortlessness of what he does and, you know, his intelligence. He's a really, really incredible talent. The goal was like something. It was like standing up in Town Head and somebody scoring it at fives. Genuinely just so gallus. So
gallus, absolutely.
Just fantastic. And, you know, he's a great talent, but I do struggle with it. Japan genuinely must be like favourites to win the World Cup because they're not even getting the squad and he's not even getting a sniff. I think he made the last squad, but it's seen as kind of highly unlikely they'll get there. But
Great for us.
Take advantage of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Not to be negative because the performance yesterday was excellent, but is there anything that kind of worried you a little bit, Chris? Obviously, I think, you know, defensively there was a couple of moments where a little bit slack.
We gave up chances at times, but nothing that particularly worried me because it wasn't like it was a back and forth. You know, we controlled the game from start to finish, largely speaking. You know, we've talked about it, you know, for a long, long time. You are going to, at times, when you play the way that we play, give up chances. There was one really glaring one that I can't remember, was it?
McKinstry,
the blasted over the bar. That's who scored against the Rangers at the weekend.
Yeah, the free kick, yeah.
He blasted that over the bar. We should have been 1-0 down at that point, you know, if you could be overly critical and point to that. But generally speaking, you know, we had gears to go up, you know, we were comfortably better than them. So I'll save my criticism for other games, I think. I don't think there was anything too much to worry about.
Alan, anything you want to pick up on?
Nah, I thought it was a great performance. But lapse of concentration for that chance. Beyond that, I thought we were, you know, wasn't in doubt. So there'll be other times to be critical, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely. We go back to Motherwell in 2 weeks' time, I think. 2 Wednesdays' time, 2 or 3. So that'll be same again. So hopefully we put in the same sort of performance. The League Cup draw was made. We take on Kilmarnock. We have the home team, which is good. The 14th of the 1st, 2023. Good draw. It was them or Aberdeen or Rangers.
I mean, it's
probably the easiest draw, like, out of the three of them. That's the one you
probably... They're probably the easiest, as you say. But when it gets to the last four, you know, people are asking, you know, when do you want Rangers in the final or in the semi-final? Well, I'd much rather they get put out in the semi-final. Thank you very much.
Aberdeen will put them out, no problem.
So, I mean, that would be ideal. Beat Kilmarnock, Aberdeen beat Rangers, and then you beat Aberdeen in the final. But... yeah, I mean, I would fancy our chances against any one of them. Obviously, playing against Rangers brings its own noise and it brings its own kind of circus around it, shall we say, you know. And obviously, they are the best team that we could probably play. But, you know, if we play anywhere near the way we've played in the last two games, you don't fear anybody domestically. The only way that we'll be beaten... I mean, like, let's go back to that Scottish Cup final, semi-final against them last... Scottish Cup final, semi-final, did I say there?
You did, aye. Made an arse.
Scott, I totally made an arse. That semi-final. I mean, I think we kind of fell into a trap. We kind of get dragged out to their level, you know, and it became a kind of kicking match. You know, obviously, even then, Vickers puts that chance away, we would win it, you know. See if we just kind of play our game the way that we have, you know, you don't fear any of them.
I think all those wee lapses that we had last, like at the end of last season, you know, when we drew with them at home and stuff like that, they're all going to come into good stead for this season, I think. Like, that's, I think that we won't go into, if we play Rangers in the final, I think, we'll play, as you say, I think we play our game and everything else will take care of itself.
It should.
That's a positive way of looking at it. I think we're overlooking the fact that Derek McInnes' record at Hampden is incredible. So it will be very difficult. I wonder how he'll set up. maybe give the man-to-man more try.
Yeah, just one more try. It's like when you're playing Football Manager, it's like, I'll try it one more time. Man Mark.
Alan Edgar says, don't look past Kilmarnock. I'm not gory.
He's one game at a time. He's starting on me now.
He's a reign of terror.
The point wasn't I wasn't looking past him. Any of those sides, I'm confident of beating if we reach any of the heights.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll look ahead to the Hearts game. Just a bit of a squad fitness update. Andrew Scott is saying, Jota's progressing. He's out training, but he won't be right for tomorrow. This was yesterday's press conference, so that would obviously be in the Motherwell game. From the weekend, it will be pretty much as it is. The ones closest to coming back are Jota and Turnbull, but they'll miss tomorrow and we'll just see about the weekend. Obviously, Callum McGregor and Carol Stalfelt are still weeks away. It's quite encouraging that McGregor's been described as weeks away because I think we had it probably not till January, but that's good. There are always teams that can go on cup runs, sometimes belaying their league form. But yeah, so Jota and Turnbull are progressing. You want Jota back as quickly as possible, Alan?
Yes, very much so. Especially when you did have, you know, wingers kind of out of form a little bit.
Yeah.
Or just not maybe at the sparkling best. And I think you could probably put Jota into that for some games as well. So he's a player you always want available.
So it's Hearts at Tynecastle on Saturday, 12:30 kickoff. They've obviously been on an interesting run. They've been getting scudded, frankly, in the Europa League. They lost 5-1 to Fiorentina, and that came off the back of a 3-0 defeat at Tynecastle. They drew 2-2 with Kilmarnock on the 9th of October, and then on Sunday there, they lost 2-0 to Aberdeen. I watched that game. I watched the first sort of 55 minutes of it. But they've not won in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. They're not won in 6 games. They've not won a lot this season.
That's plenty.
How do you feel about going to Tynecastle? Does it hold as much kind of fear as it once did, just in general? What's your thoughts, Alan?
I don't think it holds fear. What it is, though, is it's a place that context a lot of the time doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
Their form is one of those games where, not dissimilar in a way, I think sometimes to Ibrox, in that you know you can go there and you can win comfortably, you can play well if all things are equal, but it's also a team that they can get performances, and you know that they'll always be up for Celtic coming there.
Yeah.
It's absolutely a game where, look, it might backfire, they might be over up for it, they might, you know, get picked off in the first 10 minutes and it becomes a possession, great, look forward to it, but it's never one you look at and say, there are certain grounds for us that I think you don't take lightly. Ironically, one of them was, 3 weeks ago, and we lost comfortably in the day 2-0 and didn't look like scoring at all.
Yeah.
And Tynecastle was a different version of that. They've obviously a better squad. They're finding it difficult with all the games this year. But form matters not a jot. Genuinely, if you're ever going to Hearts away, you never think they've not won in the last 5, they're shite, we're going to win, because it's a place that they will get up for it. It might be their only result in a month. So I think it's just one of those ones you never take lightly. You make sure you pick the best available team to play. And I think we did learn a lesson a little bit with that. And, you know, a lot of players were off form. A last league defeat away to St Mirren. But you don't want that. You want to go play your football and do all the things right. Play football the way we want to do and double down all that. But be alert that it is a place that their form doesn't matter. And I suppose that's more talking about, that's not even to the players and the manager, because I don't doubt for a second that they will take it seriously, whatever team he puts out. It will be because he thinks that's the team that will win. But I think for fans, never be lured into thinking that, you know, it's a place that I will go and they're shite and whatever, because it just doesn't shake out like that sometimes. So always nervy, always a big game in the calendar, one of the best away fixtures you could possibly go to. So, you know, hopefully it's a good weekend for us. And it would be, I'm glad that we're going off the back of two positive
good wins. Yes.
Because I think the team are starting to, you know, use that phrase that I think Barry liked to use a lot last year, you know, start to get cooking a little bit, because if you go there, you play well, it's a place where you can go play football, and there's nowhere better to go play football and win, you know, than there, because it's just it's a phenomenal feeling. So excited, but a wee bit of caution as always going there.
What are you thinking, Chris?
I mean, allocation's been slashed over the years, tight ground, hostile away support, these things can be levelers. You never ever go there and think, as Alan says, that you're going to squish it. What you do go there is think it's potentially you can, because we've got the ability to do it, we've got the players to do it, we've done it before. But if we go and do that, if we go and win 4-0, you will appreciate it and enjoy it a way that you didn't, like, say, for instance, the Motherwell game. It'll seem bigger. Whether that the form book suggests that it should be is irrelevant. It's one of those games, the fixtures at the start of the season, you know, start of last season when we played them, you're like, fuck, we've got to Tynecastle first game of the season.
Yeah.
For all the reasons and that we've discussed. So the support are never complacent about it, and I don't think the manager or the squad will be complacent about it. So it's one of those ones that you're nervous about to an extent, but you're also really looking forward to it, because it's a great arena to put on a show. See, when you go there and you take a few off them, feels brilliant. There's a potential for that on Saturday, but in the back of your mind, you've also got that wee bit of... I mean, there is an argument to be made that it maybe doesn't merit it, you know, in terms of, you know, the form and the way it is, but it doesn't matter. That's just the way it is. It's in the back of your head when you go there. This is going to be a hard game. This is going to be tight. I'm really looking forward to it.
There is a sort of... what do you call it? You talked about levelers there and stuff. VAR is obviously going to be... It's our first game with VAR. Do you think it'll have an effect? Because it's obviously the first game for the referee. It's the first game for these players. Do you think it will have an effect? Or do you think it won't come into their minds until a decision comes to VAR or whatever? Alan?
I think it will be. I think it will... It just feels like it's set up for it. Celtic away at Tynecastle.
Yeah.
It's, I presume it's the TV game at the weekend as well. So it's the first proper glimpse that anyone is going to see of VAR in Scottish football. When do you ever go to Tynecastle and there's not a big decision
made? Exactly.
So it'll be that those first 10, 15 minutes. Hopefully it works in our favour. Hopefully what traditionally does happen at Tynecastle is you get an early tackle that, you know, quote mark, sets the tone, you know. Do that on Saturday, I would be screaming at our players to please go and put pressure on the referee and do TV signs in front of them. All the things that, you know, players shouldn't do, that's what you want, because you need to try and use it to your benefit. We want to play football, we want to win by playing football. Sometimes I just wish as well the team just had a wee bit more, they've got a meanness about them in terms of the way they play and the way that they're ruthless that way. I wish sometimes we had a wee bit more of
Gale.
The dirty side of the game. Yeah. To us as well, and I think you will see teams will use that pressure, but hopefully it will, all things being equal, and I say that with a wee smirk, it should work in our favour, because we are an attacking team who are in the box more. I think we, a lot of the time, we don't get decisions. Hopefully Tynecastle, it does work in our favour. There's so many examples you can point to in recent years where you wish you had that there, but it's all about the application of it, and I just don't really have any faith. And then I mean, you see the team that's working it as well. I don't know, so if you've any hope that it will be an absolute, you know, treat, it won't be. So I dare say it will come into play on Saturday. We just need to see how it shakes out. But hopefully, for once, it will work in our favour. And then everything then after will just be a shit show. Probably. I'll take Saturday.
How are you thinking about it, Sirani?
Well, they've already put a caveat out there saying, you know, bear with us while it gets started. If there was one game I wouldn't pick for the introduction of VAR, it would be
Tynecastle.
Well, maybe.
Ibrox. Maybe Ibrox. Probably.
Do you know what I mean? But, I mean, I would guess that there's probably going to be something controversial that comes out of VAR, and it'll be more about how it's applied rather than correcting an obvious decision that would have got away. Like, for instance, that game last season where we lost 2-1 in the open day, perfectly onside goal, you know.
An assault on Callum McGregor. Was it Callum McGregor as well? Or who was that?
Hardy?
Halliday. Who was it on again? Was it McGregor?
McGregor, yeah.
Yeah.
I hear Halliday
get
a bad injury during the week.
He did,
last week.
It was pure shady, man.
Did he? Mm. I never knew that.
I watched it live.
I watched it after. I didn't watch the whole games. Game, but I watched that.
Moving on. Exactly. These are the games, you know, incidents like that, you're going to hope that VAR is going to correct them. Maybe not get the faith, as Alan said it. But the first game, something stupid's going to happen. It's going to be like not playing to the whistle. We'll kick it into the net, but everybody stopped. Something's going to happen. But hopefully,
I can't even imagine what scenario you're describing, to be honest. And
you know that whole, we'll wait, save it for next week.
Don't worry, you don't need to get hypothetically wound up, because you'll have a chance at the weekend.
Exactly.
Hopefully we put enough goals past them that it's not a problem. Hopefully we win 4-0, but there's a major incident we can still get pissed off about, you know. So, aye, we'll
wait and see. That is optimum, actually. I take that.
We got a message from Peter. You can WhatsApp us any kind of thoughts or comments. And Peter messaged to say, because we asked at the start of the week, my question at the start of the week was, why do you think they've kind of rushed to bring in VAR before they said they would? And he replied, I would suggest they accelerated VAR as there was a risk the Scottish referees would miss out on UEFA gigs going forward. I wouldn't be surprised if Champions League will require VAR experience going forward. With such a low bar in Scotland from refereeing, is any change not better than none? Higher scrutiny of the referees, currently non-existent. Look at the red card last man situation for them on Sunday against Motherwell.
See, when it... The thing about VAR is...
Thanks, Peter.
Sorry, Peter, I interrupted. I just jumped right in there.
No, it's fine.
Don't want to be rude to the listeners. Just you two, obviously. But with VAR, I mean, it's dead easy to jump to the conspiracy theory. Aye, look who's operating it and all that sort of stuff. And I'm not ruling that out. But the biggest...
You're not ruling anything out.
I'm not ruling anything out. The biggest problem will be how cheap it is. How, you know, you see on Sky Sports and the EPL and it's got this angle and that angle and the lines. People don't have that. We'll have a ruler on a... What do you call them? CRT telly, you know, with a PlayStation 1 hooked up to it. And it'll be, well, it's going to be cheaply done, I would suggest. And that's going to, that's what's going to cause the problems. It's not going to be good VAR. It's going to be cheap VAR. And I think we'll probably see problems that come from that, would be my feeling on it. That's based on nothing, but I'm sticking with it.
Yeah, fair point. Chris Armani says VAR, cheap VAR.
Cheap VAR.
Cheap bar. Alan, I don't know what that was. I don't know why I just repeated that twice as well.
He was trying to copy your shtick from earlier and he's fucked it.
Aye.
You're in his head.
Aye, you've got me. I'm rattled.
Oh no.
Starfield Ross County here.
We're doing a, on the Lunch Club on a Friday, we have opposition and Alison scouting from our good friend Christian Wolf. We also speak to other opposition fans to get their point of view. Alan, this game on Saturday, from a lineup point of view, obviously, there's no Jota, there's no Callum McGregor, there's no Starfelt, there's no Turnbull. Would you be looking to make lots of changes, or, you know, would it just be a case of maybe bringing Joe Hart back in, and that might be it? Or what's your thoughts?
Yeah, I think Joe Hart comes back in. You go with your primo backline, which I think kind of picks itself, to be honest, at the moment. Jens is definitely ahead of Welsh now in that pecking order, irrespective of, I think he just believes that he is
the guy, yeah.
The guy, and he'll get better and that you have to live with it in the meantime. And I think he played out well on Wednesday, but does make those mistakes, those lapses in concentration, decision making at times. But, you know, he is a young player, he'll get better. And then I think the midfield is, I think that's where there's an extra space in there that I wonder what he'll do. Because if Jota's available, I think that whether he sticks with Moy or whether he brings in Haksabanovic potentially, along with, you know, O'Reilly and Hatate, I think that'll be interesting. And then it's a rotation with those front positions. I think Kyogo will stay in after Wednesday. And then I think if Jota's available, I think he plays. But I think Maeda plus one, I would imagine. I think he'll go with Maeda the weekend. If you're playing Haksabanovic in the middle, I think you definitely pick Maeda for that protection. But it'll be interesting. There's a lot of options, but I think the kind of core of the team feels like it picks itself. Those forward positions, some of those wide areas, I think there's definitely, you know, you wouldn't be too surprised if, you know, there's a few names floating about. You wouldn't be surprised at all if he makes a change or he brings someone else in. So that'll be interesting. But the core of the team is the star, if you like. That's, I think, what you'd be hoping for, especially if Jota's not available to start the game.
See, obviously, you're talking about like playing players who are in form and stuff. With, you know, Moy having two really good games in a row, would you be keen to keep that up, Chris? Or as Alan says, you know, maybe if, you know, changes, I don't know. I just think he's probably going to go with Moy in that eight. Now, that midfield three that we had on Wednesday, I think is probably the one he'll go with. Until Jota comes back, or?
I don't know. I mean, a few weeks ago, we were talking about the lineup being quite steady and that talking about changes and going, he might make a change. He might play Ralston at right back, you know. It seems far more, and it's quite ironic after getting criticism for the changes he made at, against St Mirren and we get beat. there just seems more scope for changes now. It seems as if there's enough players who've contributed to a certain level. I mean, even a guy like Burnaby, see if he started. No, I wouldn't start him, actually. I would start Taylor. But if he was in the starting lineup, you wouldn't go, oh, I'm not sure about that, because you've seen what he's capable of and you've seen how he's performed going forward. Moyes, another guy. After St Mirren, I think I said it myself, a lot of people said, you know, what's the point in having him here? For me, I thought it would be a guy who would come on to see out games, but he's shown so much more than that.
Going forward,
his range of passing. So in a few short weeks, even from that poor result, I think what you've seen is you've got some of the guys who are maybe weren't in your first choice 11, now maybe still not being there, but you're more comfortable with them coming in, and I think the manager's more comfortable bringing them in. So there's a nucleus of players there that, when you see that starting lineup, you're less likely to go, I'm not sure about that, because you've seen them perform at a certain level. And then off the back of the comments that he said, that he's looking at a lot of things while he's playing them, you know, I'll be fairly comfortable with it no matter who's there, unless he does something mad.
Puts Ralston up front.
Then I'll be right after him next week.
Big secret in the eight. Something wild. But yeah, I think I'm really looking forward to Tynecastle. I'm kind of looking forward to just how everything kind of shakes out with the VAR, because, you know, if we go and play our best game, we should be fine. And I think that kind of counts for most of these games. So I'm really looking forward to that. I personally would keep Moy in that. I'd probably keep pretty much the same team, with the exception of, yeah, I think, I don't know. Would you play a bat? You would go with Maeda, and if Jota isn't available, would it be Maeda and Abada?
No, I don't think. I'm not one for Maeda and Abada in the same team, to be honest. There's a slight lack of composure in the build-up play on both sides there, and I think the sum of both parts is a wee bit of a worry. And I think, especially somewhere like that, where your touches are so precious sometimes at Tynecastle, especially if they come out the way that they can.
And they probably will.
Your touch needs to be good. You can't have some of the nonsense that we've had in terms of Maeda's touches. You know, defensively, he's genuinely very, very good, and it's an ability. It's not work rate, it's an ability. He does it very, very well. But you need to be able to bring the ball in, you need to be able to drop it off, and you need composure, because they'll just feed off that. See, if you don't have composure, you need
the crowd gets off that on their back. Like, and
Maeda and Abada together would be, I mean, Mars would collapse if I seen that, to be honest. And that's not a criticism of them both. Nah, it probably is, actually. There's no nice way of putting that, but the both of them together. So it would need to be, I think you would either go Haksabanovic or even James Forrest with one of them. If Jota's not available, I think the idea of the two of them is just a wee bit much. You need a bit of composure. You need someone that's going to be able to put their foot in the ball. Jota can do it, Haksabanovic can do it, James Forrest can do it as well, but the pace of the game might not be for him. So I probably would like to see Haksabanovic come back into the middle. I don't think he'll do it. I think you're probably right. I think he will stick with Moy, and there's no debating that, because he's been very, very good. I think tight park, quicker team. I think there could be a lot for Haksabanovic to do in there. Those touches a bit more precious. I think Moy might drop out and then bring him back in. If Jota was available and available to start, it would be Jota left for me, or Maeda left, Jota right, either way, and Haksabanovic in with Hatate and O'Reilly. I'd really like to see that. I think it would be aggressive, good starting team, and I think we'd score goals with that team. But I think it might be a bit much to ask for Jota to start.
Yeah. Chris, can I have final thoughts on Tynecastle?
Just, as we said, I'm really looking forward to it, and it's... We're talking about a lot of these different options. When Alan's talking about Haksabanovic playing at the top of the midfield three, that excites you. You want to see some of these things, even a guy like Burnaby, you know. These are guys who, maybe Haksabanovic you had bigger hopes for because of the nature of his signing, but these guys are coming in and showing stuff that's exciting just now, and that's really good. That's just, it goes back to that enjoying watching Celtic, and Saturday's just one of those games. You've got that nervousness, you've got that kind of understanding that it's going to be a tough game, but you've also got this core group of players who can really play football when they click, and I really just really looking forward to it. I mean, I know that's quite obvious, but it's just one of those games where you talk about it, you're like, I wish it was Saturday so that I could just sit down and watch this game.
Absolutely, and as you said, Alan, and I think we'd all agree, the fact that we're coming into this having scored 10 goals in two games, conceded one, and playing some good football. A lot to be confident about. Very excited.
Just off the back of Samani's point as well, huge fixture, but Saturday early, you win that game, you just feel like you can just, the whole weekend and just opens right up.
Yeah.
You can watch all the other games. You've got the wee sniff of, oh, maybe they'll drop points elsewhere. See, there is no better feeling. See, half two on a Saturday, if you go and you spank Hearts at Tynecastle and you've got the rest of the weekend, you know, you'll like, fucking do whatever I like.
If you turn the volume down really low, you'll hear the cans getting sparked in Alan's house, man.
I'm away this weekend. I'll be watching it away, unfortunately.
Oh, so, lovely. Good stuff.
So you'll really need to listen out to hear the cans getting sparked, but you will hear it.
Or the pints getting poured.
Potentially, actually, that's a good shout.
I can exclusively reveal.
The old perfect draft. I've not heard that name in a while.
Alan Edgar sitting in a hotel room with pint cans, just...
perfect draft plugged into the USB port.
We've
18 degrees.
I want to quickly talk about the Shakhtar game on Tuesday, because obviously, again, it's such a quick turnaround with these games coming thick and fast. We'll cover the Shakhtar game in more detail Monday and Tuesday morning. But you mentioned at the start of the show, Chris, that you think it's a really important fixture and it's a really important game overall. Tell me your thoughts on that.
In terms of qualifying for the next, well, obviously it's going to be for the Europa League is the only thing we've got a chance of. That's unlikely, given the way that the fixtures have shaken out. But in terms of Ange's development as a manager, what he's talked about and how we're going to look back at this campaign overall, I think it's massive. I don't think it's as big a game, but in a slightly different way, because obviously if we were trying to still qualify in second, you would definitely need to win it. But he's been very vocal, very vociferous about coming out and saying that our performances have deserved more, right? I would agree. There's probably a debate amongst the wider Celtic support whether or not that's the case. But fundamentally, if we only come out of this group with 1 point, away to Shakhtar, the campaign's not been good, you know. It's not been good. For his sake, in terms of the squad's development, in terms of what he said, a home game against a team you should have beat away at Celtic Park on Tuesday it's not a gimme. Of course it's not a gimme. They're a good side with good players. But that's one of those games where the Celtic support have got every right to expect us to win. And if we do, and we do it in style, and we do it well, he can, whatever happens in the, you know, Madrid happens in Madrid, but he can legitimately talk about saying 4 points, you know, first Champions League campaign, I think our performances deserve more. We've got this. We'll go again next season, or at least we'll try and go again next season qualification-wise. If we don't win that game, you know, it's all talk, really. And that might sound harsh. And, you know, in the cold light of day, when you go back and analyse it a bit, you might actually agree with them. You know, that's, as I said, that's a game that the Celtic support have every right to expect us to win. And I think it does wonders for the squad morale. It does wonders for us going forward in terms of where we are as a squad and our experience, if we can get that win under our belt. So for me, it's pretty big. Plus, if you get that win, you go to Madrid, they're already qualified. You can dream the dream for 20 minutes until they score, but you know, there's so many of our supporters going out there. You'd love us to get that win under the belt, and then you go like that. Let's go here, have a go, dream that dream, and then, you know, if that happens, you might end up with Europa League football. But Tuesday's massive for me.
Alan, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think broadly in the exact same points. I think if you don't, then it leaves question marks, and we use the word legitimacy a lot at the early days of Ange in terms of getting tangible results so that you can point to it and say, this works. We're an outlier, probably, largely in terms of how we play. We, you know, it's very direct. There's no hiding what we want to do. Other teams are a bit more coy, try and maybe make tactical tweaks. We really, really stick with it. But if you can get results, then I think everyone then believes, players don't doubt it. Players, you can then encourage players to go and do more and say, be more aggressive and do everything. If you come out the group, though, in those big games, I think, say we get Champions League football next year, which would be great, you went in that first game thinking, remember what happened last year.
Yeah.
We'll be better next year, I don't doubt, but you might get a harder draw that makes the whole thing so much more difficult. If you get 4 points minimum from this group, you then look at it and say, right, we can do it. And we were unlucky in some of the other games, and we get Real Madrid, and, you know, there are two, so you don't expect anything there. If you don't, as Amani says, then I think it does, it leaves question marks, and I think a lot of people will then, everything, whether it's a failure or whether it's just disappointing, I think hinges on this next game.
Yeah.
If we don't beat Shakhtar on Tuesday, then it's a failure, I think, in terms of the European campaign. If we do, it might be disappointing because we might not get third, but there's loads to take from it. And I think there is loads to take from the performance. But if you don't, then I think that's a worry. And I think also just the dynamic of this season with the way the World Cup is. We've got two games in very quick succession before the World Cup. It could mean that before the break, you could have a bit of a damp squib. And obviously the players will go away. We've got the matches over in Australia. So, you know, you'll forget about it and you'll be dying to get back. But you would like to take something into that last game so that everything then just keeps rolling on and it feels like football's coming thick and fast and it's positive and it keeps that vibe going. It could be a difficult night if you don't get that Tuesday night. You think of the home crowd against Leipzig, you know, Real Madrid a bit different. It could be, you know, it's got the potential to be a tricky night on Tuesday night, I think. So it's one, you know, we'll look at it again Monday, but you know, it's one of those ones that you want to come out the traps and make sure you get a big result because the upside is there. There's the other side of it as well, but let's try and stay positive.
Yeah, we will. And as I say, we'll do some preview of the game on Monday and Tuesday. You can sign up for the cynic.co podcasts every single day. Lots of Celtic content covering all angles, as we all
most angles.
So yeah, that's the Shakhtar game.
Just most.
Not all. Legally, you need to be quite clear about this.
That's the Shakhtar game coming quickly after. Alan?
Will you talk to pre-Rangers game? Will you talk to a Rangers
fan? I will not talk to a Rangers fan.
Thank God. Do you know, that's been on my mind since you mentioned about the opposition thing. Yeah, imagine talking to a Rangers fan the Friday before a derby and being able to publish it.
Good luck to you guys. I hope you're not happy after the game at the weekend, but, you know, as long as football wins.
That's it, yes.
Lure them in, though. In fact, I don't know where I'm going with that.
Alan, Jesus.
I will stop talking.
Anyway. But yeah, so the Hearts game on Saturday, there'll be a reaction to that straight afterwards, which should drop just after the game's finished. We'll record straight away. We have Beyond the Scoreboard on Sunday, which will be looking at Celtic from a stats and analysis point of view. It'll be myself, Alan and Christian Wolfe, and we'll look over some of the interesting stats over the last month or so. We're going to finish on the news that Shunsuke Nakamura has announced his retirement from football. I think it's at the end of the season 44-year-old. Let's just talk about him for a bit because he was very much a shining light in the Gordon Strachan era. And I always get like to get a wee dig in there about Strachan. But no, Shunsuke Nakamura. So, Manny, what a player.
Phenomenal. Technical ability. I mean, we've had a lot of players with great technical ability, and you know, I'm not going to go in and debate who's better or not. He's just a player who you enjoyed watching. He, you know, his free kick ability, I'm sure we'll come and talk about that. You know, talking about Strachan, that there's always a wee kind of disappointment that Strachan had him playing out wide, because you often wonder what a more central Nakamura would have been capable of.
Yes,
but that was the type of setup that we had under him. You know, I think he wanted a bit more dig in midfield as opposed to guile. But there's so many wonderful moments from him, you know, in terms of the quality that he was able to produce, you know. And he, you know, what did we pay for him? A couple of million pounds?
I think it was like 2.5.
You talk about kind of the prices you play for players and, you know, the value you get for them. He's right up there. Some of the moments he gave us, you know, I'm sure we'll come and talk about them. Just absolutely phenomenal. And then as a professional, you know, he really took care of himself. The fact that he's still playing in the J League at 44, and I know there's a guy, another player who's older than him, you know, and people use that maybe as a dig about the J League, but no, it's no joke. He's able to play at that level still at the age he is because of the dedication that he put into himself as a football player. And it's when you hear his name, you just, it's just fond memories. And even when you see clips since he's left, you know, free kicks through buses and all that, that sort of daft stuff.
Incredible.
You know, you still watch it, you're still like, it was absolutely phenomenal. The guy just had a knack of putting the ball where the keeper couldn't reach. And it was unbelievable.
Alan, yourself, your thoughts on Nakamura?
Yeah, I mean, the free kicks speak for themselves and they're just a joy. I'll never not watch particularly the home.
The Man United one.
I'll never not watch that if it pops up. But I think I always, and I think it's kind of similar to yourself, the shining light in the Strachan era, but he had a tough shift. It was quite hard, I think, for him to be impressive in that team at times because it was a very workman-like team.
Yeah.
And I always felt like it looked a little bit like he'd not been hung out to dry, because that's not quite true, but he did have a really big responsibility to be the one that had a bit of guile, a bit of quality.
He was the one, like no one else.
And I think sometimes there's this notion that you show the Man United home goal and it's like, yeah, the Celtic fans loved him. And I think most people did. But he was the one that I think was front and centre. See, if, especially at home in those games that maybe, those league games where we weren't a great side to watch under Stratton. We were successful, but we were not fun to watch.
And at
I
all.
Think he was the one that, because he was a subtle player and he was a joy to watch, you know, the way he drifted in and he always wanted someone to, he always wanted to make something happen. But if he didn't, he would drop it off. And I always felt like I had a hard time at Celtic Park. So I always think those moments everyone's drawn to, but I think the reason you're drawn to that is because it was really hard to be, he didn't have players to play, you know, you imagine putting him in this team just now, you know, a real luxury, or if he'd played in the middle, he was a, such a talented player, but it was quite hard for him to impress a lot in that team. He managed it because he's a phenomenal talent and his dead ball ability was just incredible. I've never seen anything like it at Celtic before, but it was quite hard to impress in that team, but his ability, his professionalism really made sure that actually he was, and he was an integral part of that team. And if he hadn't been there, some of the most incredible Celtic memories that you had, especially in that era, wouldn't have been there. Kilmarnock,
just oh incredible. My goodness.
And what iconic, and like, you'd see how much it meant to him as well, and just a phenomenal talent. Loved him, easily the best player in that kind of era of Gordon Strachan. The best decision we made was signing Naka.
I mean, when you think back to that era, it was between us and them about who was more dogged, because they were a very workman-like side.
Industrious.
Industrious, yes. They were a very dogged side as well. So sometimes when you've got two teams playing against that, as Alan says, it was difficult for him perhaps to showcase his natural talents. And back then, people did say, he's not got enough dig, you know, he's too lightweight for Scottish football. He's never done it against Rangers, because it took him a wee while before he got a goal against them. I think he ended up with a couple.
He did, yeah.
He got a free kick in the game, we get beat at Parkhead in the last minute. But, I mean, that, you talk about his free kicks. I mean, that ball from Gary Caldwell, what a centre-half he was.
And we played goal music when we scored that as well, by the way.
Yeah.
Goal music?
I like it.
Oh, after the goals, yeah.
I don't know,
yeah.
The Pogues Fiesta or something.
Yeah, love it.
I don't know if that's exactly what it was. It may have been the Fratellis or something, but...
Yeah.
And as a strike, that goal was just, I mean...
The one where he rattles it from about 40 yards.
Aye, and it just swerves, and McGregor nearly got a hand to it on the way out, man. He was absolutely nowhere near it. And it was just, technically, it was just a wonderful, wonderful strike. But overall, I think, you know, when you've seen what he was capable of, now don't get me wrong, right, he went to Espanyol after he played for us, and then I think he was at, was it Reggiana we signed him from?
Mm-hmm.
Was it? So, I mean, he never kind of played in the upper echelons of one of the big leagues, and, you know, he wasn't blessed with a huge amount of pace. There were some shortcomings in his game. Let's not talk about, you know, we're not pretending here that he was, should have been at the upper echelons of the European game. Some elements of his game, though, were up there, you know, and it's a bit like some players. I'm not comparing, I'm going to mention Kyogo here, not because they're both Japanese, but we're talking about Kyogo's movements world class, but there's other elements that stop him from getting there. Nakamura was a bit like that as well, but dead ball ability, was there anybody better in Europe than him at that time? Janinho at Lyon?
Yeah.
Maybe, but we're talking that level. That's, and when you got a free kick close to goal, it was almost quite like a penalty, and you were thinking, yes, you know, you would celebrate a foul at the edge of the box or a crafty dive like Jarosic did, because you thought, we've got a real chance of getting a goal here. And see, having that in your team, it's great. It's that whole thing where you talk about, you know, that star, that one wee thing, that one wee bit of extra that you've got. That's what Nakamura was. He was a total leveller. I remember when we had Milan in the last 16, I went to that game when Kaká scored from the halfway line. that entire game, you know, we were under the cosh. You know, I look back at the players that they had. Pirlo was there. Maldini was still playing.
Seedorf.
You know, great, great players. And then I looked at our defensive line, and it was like Liam Eller and Paul Telfer, McManus, and it was a day actually that was playing. You know?
Was it? Aye?
But you know, we done well to keep them tight for that entire period of time. But the one thing that was in my head for that entire game was, see if we get a foul at the edge of the box, we've got a right good chance here. And that's the magic that he brought.
Do you know what he's like? He's like an NFL kicker when it comes to free kicks. Like he's so specialised. Like you bring that guy on to do that specific thing or whatever. Sorry, Al.
No, just when you talk about some of your kind of favourite Nakamura memories, I think it would be, obviously he took all our set pieces with the exception of penalties.
Yeah.
I remember he missed.
It always astounds me how you can be incredible. Like you could put it anywhere from 25 yards, but ask him to shoot, ask really good free kick takers to shoot from 12 yards out. And they're just like, my legs look fucking jelly. I can't remember who we were against, but I sat behind the goals in the Lisbon Lions stand at the time. I think it was the last year, maybe my student season ticket. I loved that discount. And we were rotten, but we were a lot under striking at home. It was fucking turgid to watch at times. And the ball went out of play, and Nakamura took the throw in quickly. And I remember the reaction from a guy who sat behind me. And he obviously just didn't like Naka, which a lot of people kind of didn't. He was a bit subtle and whatever, and it genuinely, as soon as he took the throw and he picked the ball up, and he just tutted and went, has to take all the set pieces him, didn't he? Throw it. And genuinely he was fucking fuming because he took a throw in, and it's just like, half the guys, he bangs him in constantly, mate. This was obviously, he'd been here years at this point.
Yeah.
And it's just like, give him a fucking break, man. Even it could have been a foul throw. Yeah. And you would go, oh, do you know what, if it keeps him happy, so fucking be it.
Yeah.
It was just the it was the tut that really, it was the tut heard around Parkhead.
He was here for 4 years. He played 166 games, scored 34 goals. Obviously, the free kicks are kind of well documented. They always pop up on like the UEFA Twitter and stuff. It's great to see because he scored a free kick down at Old Trafford as well, which are very underrated. It has the sound of the ball hitting the net, and you hear the net sound. Love it.
Also, the great commentary from the Rangers game as well. Shoot, Naka. I'll never know watch that one if I had a couple of drinks on
that's
YouTube.
That's the one that got away, wasn't it? But I suppose we got that glorious commentary after that.
Yeah, now he's a dick.
Superb.
Love it.
Peak internet, I think that.
Oh, definitely.
But even just thinking about him, was it his debut, the 2-each game where he against Dundee United? Don't know if it was his debut. Don't know why. Maybe it was. My memory's playing tricks on me because I'm old, but the one where he kind of lifts it over the keeper at Celtic Park, I think we drew 2-each.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah. Oh, shit, yeah.
And then...
just came out of my head, though.
The league-winning free kick at
Kilmarnock.
And the one that I was talking about earlier on where he scored in the last minute against St Mirren, and that was the famous cry was, he just puts it where the keeper can't reach it. He's a cheat. And obviously...
Scottish football parlance,
but... you know, so many, they just kind of keep coming back to you. You know, the striker, as I talked about against Rangers, he was just capable of wonderful moments. And, you know, these Roddick's a player, you know, you can think, when we talked about when he left, you can just rhyme off the moments. And these guys are special when you start thinking about them, you know.
Yeah.
That top from the Kilmarnock away game with Naka holding it, waving it above his head with that wee white vest. Genuinely iconic. Yeah, it would have been very, very different had we had Gordon Strachan with no Nakamura if he hadn't signed, like...
Yeah. Yeah.
Football stopped that.
For me, my probably highlight was the hat-trick against Dundee United at Tannadice.
Oh,
absolutely fantastic. I remember watching that in the pub with me and my dad, and it was just absolutely glorious. The technique, the ability, the ghosting into the back post, absolutely brilliant. Anyway, we're going to wrap up, but lovely to talk about... Nakamura, ex-players who are just fantastic. thecynic.co. We've got lots of stuff coming up for you next week. Got the Lunch Club tomorrow. We've got stuff over the weekend. As I say, daily podcasts every day. If you've got any information that you need to find out about it, you can email editor@thecynic.co. You can DM us on Twitter @90MinuteCynic, and we'll give you all the information you need. There's lots of free content on the website as well. Lots of features and stuff. So thecynic.co, check it out. We'll be back next week as always, and we'll look at the Shakhtar game and the games coming up. But Alan Edgar, pleasure as always, my friend.
Thanks for having me,
mate. Christopher Samani.
Terrific. Enjoyed it. Thank you.
Lovely stuff. From Chris Samani, from Alan Edgar, from myself, Chris Gallagher, this has been The Cynic Weekly, and we'll speak to you down the road.